This Steve Jones Show podcast is now loading. The Steve Jones Show podcast is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers. Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more, this is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and Sunbury Motor Company. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And this half hour brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Marcus Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, business, boat, motorcycle. Multitude of insurance needs. Purdy Insurance handles them all. And does everything they can to save you money. Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. And it's time for another great Tuesday with Neil. My friend, always welcome. Thank you so much for carving out time for us.
The pleasure is all mine, as always. I'm glad you guys keep a spot for me.
Oh, that's an easy call on my part. All right, so now we have now watched the Steelers lose in a game and beaten by Joe Flacco again, of all things. What did you see Sunday that maybe you hadn't seen yet for the Steelers?
I think my big takeaway was the fact that they really got out-coached. And I know that most people use that as an opportunity to rip Mike Tomlin for, you know, essentially losing the game. But you got to take your hat off to Shane Steichen and his staff and what they did. They reinvented their team. What you saw out of the Colts in Week 4 was not at all what they were doing in the first 3 weeks. And what they basically said defensively was the Steelers have a serious lack of experience along their interior offensive line, and we're going to challenge that, and we're going to do that in a way that can be kind of risky, but we feel like they're not going to be able to handle it. Their interior defensive linemen shot gaps around Zach Frazier pretty much the entire first half. The second half was, you know, the damage had been done by that point, but they made Frazier get off the block and get to the side very quickly. And that put a ton of pressure on both him and Spencer Anderson, a player that doesn't have a whole lot of experience, Mason McCormick at that point. Then James Daniels got hurt. And what they were doing, that strategy worked even better at that point, because you're looking at a complete lack of experience along your interior offensive line. And when you have monsters like Brenton Buckner, or DeForest Buckner, able to penetrate at will, it destroyed their running game. It greatly affected their passing game. And in that, they allowed the Colts offense to have the freedom to go out and make some plays. And they, from there, you saw how potent that offense can be. I mean, I don't know if you noticed that in the time Anthony Richardson was in there, that first throw he made, that was a high-level throw. I mean,
sure
it was 17 yards down the field. That sail route, a three-step drop, he put it right on the money. That's a really tough throw to make. And he hit it like it was nothing. Mm-hmm. And that's intimidating. I mean, you saw that. You saw the offense really pick up after they hit that. They clearly had planned that. They wanted that throw. They wanted that situation. And they got it. And they rolled early. It took the Steelers' defense a bit to get their footing. And on top of that, you know, some hay was made out of offensive coordinator Jim Bob Cooter saying that they had a plan for T.J. Watt, as if, you know, he's not allowed to have a plan for T.J. Watt. The bad part is he did. They shut him down by and large for the most part of the game. Now, usually fans will yell about holding and this and that. Okay, fine, whatever. The bottom line is Watt made one play in that game. If you were a team that requires your edge defender to make four or five plays a game in order to win, you might not have all that balanced of a team. And you might be the Pittsburgh Steelers, because that's what happened. Essentially, they did not get the splash play late in the game like they have so many times with Watt. I don't ever want to say he's a non-factor, because clearly he's a factor. He's the number one priority of their offense. But Indianapolis's offense was very effective for a large chunk of that game, and it took the Steelers' defense a bit too long to get back into it by the time their offense figured out what was going on and was able to move. That's why, you know, it was kind of one-sided in the first half. Indianapolis did a great job, a very different-looking team than what they were. Pittsburgh was able to get back into it. I think player for player, Pittsburgh's probably better, but coaching mattered in this game. And I thought Shane Steichen did a better job creating a plan to beat his opponent than Mike Tomlin did.
You're making Fitzpatrick. How are you supposed to play that play? I mean, I don't quite understand. I think you have to have a feel for the game. And I know Richardson got hurt on the play, but I don't think Fitzpatrick did anything wrong.
No, I mean, on that particular play, you know, Anthony Richardson's not a small man.
Okay. No.
They have a design run aiming for contact around the 5 to the 3 yard line with the effort of, you know, with the idea in mind that he's able to roll off and bowl forward and get the ball across the pylon. Fitzpatrick is coming in to take on a guy that is 75% larger than he is. Guys like Minka Fitzpatrick have to be, they have to have contact courage in those situations. They're out of a job. You've got to go in ready to hit somebody. Now, you don't expect the injury that Richardson had previously sustained, but Richardson basically gave up on the play, but at a point that he wasn't able to safely slide or to show that he's giving himself up. There's a point in which you can't hold up. There's contact that's going to be made, and where Richardson was just a very different type of posture than he would have in any other play. He tried to give himself up. Fitzpatrick went into him, I think recognized what was going on. He bumped him a little bit. It wasn't, you know, there wasn't anything wrong with that. That's, you know, that's the one everybody yelled at, but that's not the one they flagged. They flagged the one that the ball was clearly well past the receiver down the sideline. Fitzpatrick pulls up. He doesn't barrel into him, but it's close enough that there's going to be some contact. He didn't out smash into him. That's not the spirit of the rule. It's not the type of play that they're trying to eliminate from the game. That's more of a, you know, we're colleagues. I could have hit you if you caught the ball, just so you know that could have happened. That wasn't a penalty. I think, honestly, the official in review, if he doesn't agree that that wasn't a penalty, he's going to be told that that wasn't a penalty, because as Mike Tomlin even admitted in his press conference today, he talked to the head of officiating. They said that it wasn't. It's not something that should have been flagged. Obviously, Tomlin didn't think it should be flagged. I don't think there's any Steelers fan that thought it should be flagged. I wouldn't be surprised if the receiver didn't think it should have been flagged. It happens, unfortunately. It's a bad call in kind of a tough spot. But you get that they want to err on the side of caution. But you have to understand, there are examples of, you know, I don't want to necessarily call it incidental contact, but that wasn't aggressive. It wasn't forceful. They happened to bump into each other after the ball had landed. Now, if Fitzpatrick launches into his head, then yes, that's a penalty. If he's hitting him 5 seconds down the field in that same fashion, maybe that's a penalty. What happened there, though, is not that's not anything that's causing any major concern. It's not causing health issues down the line for players. That's just football. I think, you know, in a perfect world, he pulls up completely and does everything he possibly can to avoid the player, but that's not realistic. He's got to be on that edge, and it was close enough to say he's pulling up. If he happens to bump into him after the fact, so be it.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so they did come back in this game. Was there anything in that comeback that is a sign of anything, or is it just they fell short?
To be honest, I think people should be encouraged, because what you saw is for the fourth game in a row, the Steelers are a considerably better second-half team than their opponent is.
Yeah.
And I know that may not seem like it's much, but it matters, because it's the one trend they do have. they're 3-1. I think they got a pretty decent Falcons team on a bad game. I think they beat kind of a bad Broncos team. They had plenty of opportunities to beat, I think, a fairly mediocre Colts team. Where they are right now, though, is a team that is identifying what their opponent is doing and making changes to their plan, to their technique, going over what they need to isolate those things, fix them, and improve on the things that they're trying to do. Their quarterback has played better, considerably better, in the second half than he has in the first for four games in a row. I would assume Justin Fields will start again this week. We'll see. You never know what exactly. Mike Tomlin's not really going to give this away, certainly not this early in the week. But I think you have a player that's getting a lot more comfortable, especially in the second half, after they've seen some things, after they figured out what the opponent is doing, they're attacking a bit more. We saw another classic example of the best and the worst of George Pickens. You hope you can get just the good things of him straight through in a game, and maybe that changes the outcome. And I think it very well could have in this particular game. The right play call in that particular instance. I understand Pickens is trying to make a play up the sideline like that, but he's holding the ball in such a way that it makes it seem like he's thinking about diving for the pylon. He's 7 yards shy of the pylon. I mean, it's another example to me in my mind. I don't think George Pickens knows where he is on the field a lot of the times, and that's a concern. That's a problem, but it's something that's fixable. Justin Fields completed a lot of passes late in that game. They scored in three consecutive drives when Fields was playing his best football. They melted down in the last four plays of the game, which was unfortunate. But overall, you saw the level of play you would hope from a veteran quarterback, from a better offense, and from a defense that was trying to make up for kind of a poor outing in the first half, to the point where they came back from 17-0 down, from 17-3 down at halftime, and put together a set of plays in three phases of the game where they could have tied, if not won, the game with 2 minutes to go. They had the ball down three. It could have been ultimately an example of the need to start perhaps better a little bit earlier, but overcoming the adversity that they faced right away with a limited clock on the road, I thought they were pretty close to doing that. I thought they were going to. In fact, I expected a touchdown on that final drive, just the way that they had been going. In the way that Indy's defense really just kind of lost the edge that they had. That's a good takeaway. I didn't imagine that they were going to win 17 games this season, so it doesn't surprise me that they would have lost. The concern would be of the first four teams that they played, this is the one I would have bet on them to win. I think they match up much better with Indianapolis than they did with anybody else, but it goes back to what I was saying. I think Shane Steichen did a phenomenal job, and the coaching battle was pretty clearly on Indy's side. That ultimately won them the game. Injuries don't help Pittsburgh either. It's something they're going to have to figure out this week. But it's not bad. That's a pretty good first quarter of the season, for what you could have realistically thought for the Steelers. Not a bad start to the year.
And now they've got the Cowboys on Sunday Night Football at 8:20. So what's been your opinion of what we're seeing from Dallas to this point? Because Lawrence is going to be out, and I think the Parsons has to be iffy. What's your thought on them?
Yeah, Parsons doesn't look real good from what I've heard to this point. Dallas is streaky. I thought last week against the Giants, and I know that the Giants aren't exactly expected to win the Super Bowl, but that was a must-win game for Dallas. They knew that you were going to get a game where your star players are going to take over themselves. They're going to if they have to, they're going to play off script. They're going to do what they have to do in whatever situation to win that game. It was a desperation game. How good the Cowboys are as a team right now, that's more of the question. And I don't know. I mean, they've got star power. We've seen it. They have an offense that can put points on the board. They've built themselves that way. It's just for one reason or another, they don't ever really seem to be able to put all of it together. So you're going into every game they play wondering if this is a team that can beat you 40-10, or it's a team that is going to commit five turnovers, miss a bunch of tackles, and play themselves out of a victory. I'm not sure which it is. I know that this really tests the idea. You know, Mike Tomlin is a coach that seems to have his team much better for home primetime games than any other time. It's a tough matchup for Dallas in that sense, but I really think injuries are going to play a huge part in this for both teams. You're down three starting edge rushers if you lose Lawrence as well as Parsons for Dallas. Highsmith looks like he's going to be out again. Can they contain T.J. Watt the same way Indianapolis did? You know, that took a lot of effort. The Steelers are going to need probably a little bit more up front, probably some more action from their middle linebackers, which is something I think they can do. An enormous task for Joey Porter, as well as Dante Jackson, who's playing well above expectation right now in a secondary that's done a pretty good job. If it gets the pass rush in front of it, can the Steelers put all those things together to slow down what should be and what is individually a very potent, very powerful Cowboys offense playing in Pittsburgh? It's going to be tough. You know, I was talking to a guy that writes for the Cowboys the other day, and it just, a lot of this feels like that 2016 game where the Steelers went 0-for-5 on two-point conversions, and ultimately it came down to the Cowboys having the ball late, and something happened. I think it was a Sean Davis run blitz that missed, and Ezekiel Elliott ran for like 40 yards, literally untouched, just through a gap, the most simple play in the world. The Steelers lost, I forget the final, like 38-35 or something like that. But a high-scoring game, back and forth, very exciting second half. It wouldn't surprise me if it ends up being something like that. This is the type of game where I could see the Steelers' offense connecting on a few bigger plays, perhaps, than they have up to this point.
You know, it's interesting, though, as you reference the Cowboys' star power. They do have star power. But to me, it's a team that has star power, but you have to fill in around your star power, and that's the part where I think the Cowboys have not done well. They have not filled in well around their stars, whatever the money situation happens to be.
Now, this is a theory that I don't think would gain a whole lot of popularity if I ever wrote it or you know, went public with it, but I would suggest this. You look back at the last decade, Mike Tomlin's Steelers were loaded offensively. Very strong offensive line, high-level quarterback, running back, wide receiver. And that made them, in a way, kind of a house of cards. One injury really screwed up a lot of their plans, because how do you prepare for depth behind guys like that? I mean, literally in 2014, they lost their running backs at one point. One, because he took a cheap shot at midfield in week 16 in a win over Cincinnati, and the other was cut because he got into a fight with the team's linebackers coach because he left the field early because he wasn't playing. How do you play backups to be ready to go, to be in a position where they want to be behind the star players? Not speaking to whose job should be what, who ought to be doing what. It's what happened. And I think Dallas, to some extent, when you sign all those guys, when you have all of them, they're locked in place. CeeDee Lamb is their most explosive running back.
Yes.
They don't have a running back of note. Yeah. He's a big game player. He's a big time player. You get him the ball, good things happen. Yeah. You're paying him that much, and he's that impactful of a player, you got to get him the ball 15 times a game. Yeah. Conversely, look at the New England Patriots back in 2016. They laid waste to the Steelers in the AFC Championship game. That game was never competitive. Le'Veon Bell went down early. That was the Steelers' entire team. They didn't have anything else. House of cards. I don't think Gronk – was Gronk on that team? I think he was out for the year that season.
Right.
They had nothing offensively as far as individual talent goes. But what they did have was – 26 guys on offense who could rotate in and out, play two different positions, and do all kinds of stuff that the Steelers were not even remotely prepared to handle defensively. So which one do you want? Do you want the star power or do you want the depth? It seemed to me like Belichick built all of his teams with the idea in mind that if we don't have the stars, we don't have people we are forced to get the ball to. And that was the Steelers back in those days. They right. couldn't beat New England because of that. Dallas, I think, is a good example of what the Steelers were back then. They have some great players. Individually, you think they would do a lot more, but then they don't. And it makes you wonder, why is that? Is it because they put their entire game plan every single week very easily on film? Because it has to be, you know, Dak Prescott. It has to be CeeDee Lamb. There are only two guys that can run the ball. They're not particularly good. This is where they're going with everything. It's not too hard to figure out. New England reinvented their offense in the bye week that they earned every year before the playoffs. It's because they went out specifically, found a bunch of guys that can do well in two situations, and that's it. Mm-hmm. You put a bunch of those guys together, they have 20 different situations that they can play to, and interchangeable pieces that make it really hard to prepare for. Dallas is not like that. Dallas is pretty much what you see is what you get. And I think that makes them a bit easier to beat than perhaps their overall talent level should be. Now, I say all that, but you put Micah Parsons on the field, and he'll wreck anybody's plan for anything right. at any time. If he gets out there and plays, he's absolutely a factor. I mean, in my opinion, he's right there with Watt as far as defensive MVPs, you know, guys that legitimately win games for their team from the defensive side of the ball. There aren't too many of them over the last 10 years in the league, in my opinion. Aaron Donald, T.J. Watt, and Micah Parsons. You know, these are game record defensive players, and the way the game is played, there's just not too many of those. So if they get Parsons at close to 100%, he can do plenty of damage on his own.
Always a pleasure, sir. Appreciate it very much. You're the best.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys.
Neil Coulong. You're on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
Hi, this is Season. For over 100 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. With the experience of our trained and knowledgeable staff, you can rest assured that your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 570-286-5855. Visit our website at purdyinsurance.com or check us out on Facebook to see what we can do for you.